A wise woman once observed, and I quote, "There are only four kinds of people in the world: those who have been caregivers, those who are currently caregivers, those who will be caregivers, and those who will need caregivers." Those were the words of former First Lady Rosalynn Carter. And you know, her words are even more profound and relevant than, well, ever before. Because amid populating aging and the high cost of care, tens of millions of Americans are serving as unpaid caregivers to family members or loved ones. And while I think we can all pretty much agree that these services are truly invaluable, they're often performed without any level of compensation and put stress and strain on the caregiver. Welcome back to Clear Path, your roadmap for life. I'm your host, Al Waller. With me is Catherine Collinson, founding CEO and president of nonprofit Transamerica Institute, to share five strategies that can help caregivers manage their responsibilities and possibly alleviate some of their burden. Well, Catherine, as always, great to have you back.
Thanks, Al. It's great to be back.
Now, I got to say, I'm really looking forward to learning about your team's research for caregivers, especially what might be done to support them. So where should we start?
Well, as you mentioned in your intro, I'm all set to talk about five strategies for helping caregivers cope with their responsibilities. And each of these five strategies are born out of what we're seeing in our research. So I'm just going to jump right in with the first strategy. And that is, for all you caregivers out there, it is so important that you recognize you are not alone. Our most recent survey of workers, people who are employed and have jobs, our most recent survey found that among those who are currently serving as caregivers, either for a relative or friend, almost 4 in 10 say they often feel isolated and alone. And I'm here to say it does not have to be that way. You are not alone. Caregiving is an everybody responsibility, and it is widely shared across socioeconomic and demographic segments of our society. We all share it in common. And the prevalence of workers who are either currently serving or have been caregivers in the past is nearly 4 in 10. And we expect that number to grow into the future. And our survey found some things that might dispel a myth or two. There's a longstanding perception that caregivers are primarily women, whereas our survey finds that women are somewhat more likely to either currently be serving or have served as caregivers in the past, 39%. Men are following close behind. In fact, 36% of men are either currently serving or have served as a caregiver during their working careers. Another perception is caregivers skew older, especially those who are in the workforce and have jobs. Actually, that's not really the case. When we look across generations, millennials are actually the most likely to be caregivers, followed by Generation Z and Generation X, and then lastly, baby boomers. So caregiving is something that is happening for people who are managing their jobs and helping a loved one. It is universal across generations, and surprisingly, the younger generations are more likely to be caregivers than boomers, who are the oldest generation in the workforce.
Well, you know, Catherine, that's really surprising because I had, well, assumed baby boomers would be the most likely to be caregivers. So, you know, what more can you tell us about that?
Millennials are now in their 40s and well into what we call their sandwich years. They are juggling their careers, they're raising families, and they're being called upon to serve as a caregiver for an aging parent or loved one. Many boomers have already retired, so they're somewhat less likely to be caregivers. But I want to point out, some boomers who are retired actually did so because of their caregiving responsibilities. Another thing we see across generations is Generation Z is more likely to be caring for a grandparent, whereas their older counterparts are more likely to be caregiving for a parent.
So I guess for all you caregivers out there, perhaps it's somewhat comforting, cold or otherwise, to know that, well, at least you're not alone, because in all probability, you most likely know someone who has walked in a caregiver's shoes. Now, Catherine, what's your second strategy for caregivers?
My second strategy is take good care of yourself. Caregiving is extremely difficult work. In fact, based on my own experience, I believe it can be the hardest job in the world. So you have to safeguard your own well-being while caring for your loved one.
You know, you make a great point here, Catherine, because I've known caregivers, and I've been one, who become physically drained and mentally burned out to the point that they suffer health issues themselves, and that's not a good thing.
I am fully in agreement with that. Caregiving can be exhausting. It can be stressful. And in my own experience, it can bring situations that have what I call 1,000 little heartbreaks in a day. Just things that happen. It's your loved one. And caregiving is more than just checking items off of a to-do list. You're all in, and it requires and involves so many emotions at so many different levels. And it's hard to see a loved one who is experiencing health issues. Going back to our survey, what we find, and this underscores the importance of strategy number two, taking good care of yourself, we found that almost half of workers who are also currently serving as caregivers often feel anxious and depressed. And almost half often feel unmotivated and overwhelmed, which are classic symptoms of burnout. And then we found one other alarming data point, which I really want to underscore, is when we asked caregiving workers about healthy activities they're doing on a consistent basis, only 35% indicated they are avoiding harmful substances such as alcohol, cigarettes, or drugs. And this type of self-medication can be dangerous. It can undermine your long-term health, and it can be habit-forming, and habits are extremely difficult to break.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to exacerbate the problem. And I'll also add that resentment can also enter the picture, you know, not necessarily those being cared for, but it can come if, you know, one feels they're shouldering the weight when others in the family don't or won't step up. So then what are some things caregivers can do to care for themselves?
The first is just be kind to yourself. Caregiving involves a lot of decisions with your loved one and how you spend resources and time. And there's always a lot going on, and it's easy to second guess yourself. And don't go there. Be kind to yourself. Also, Al, I know it sounds super basic and a lot of people don't want to hear it, but focusing on the fundamentals can really make a positive difference. And those fundamentals are eating healthy, exercising regularly, getting plenty of sleep, and managing stress. And importantly, seek medical care and mental health support when needed. All too often, a caregiver could be so wrapped up in their caregiving responsibilities that they let their own health take a back seat. And you just can't do that. You've got to take good care of yourself.
Agreed. And this is good counsel for all of us, regardless of our circumstances. In addition, I'd also like to chime in with an invitation for our listeners to check out our recent podcasts on combating burnout, prioritizing support, the rejuvenating power of nature, and five tips for avoiding harmful substances. Each does a really nice job in promoting self-preservation, which, again, is not overrated. Now, let's hear about your next strategy.
My third strategy, which actually builds on the first two, is seeking help when needed. And for a lot of people, this can be really hard to do. And help can come from various sources. The first I want to focus on is family. Caregiving is a family matter. So if possible, make it a shared responsibility among family members versus one member of the family taking on a disproportionate amount of the responsibility. Now, we know in this day and age, many families are scattered. Adult children have left the nest and they may be living in a different city, state, or different part of the country. Hopefully, there's at least one local family member to be the caregiver, but they don't have to go it alone. A lot of caregiving entails things like research. researching insurance, researching health providers, and researching other issues. And a lot of this research can be done virtually and online. So even if you're a member of the family and you're not local, you can be helping out in ways that are going to really help ease the burden on the person who is local. And then another thing I want to point out is, especially if somebody's local and they are spending, you know, a lot of time with the care recipient, if you're that person, ask your family members for a break. Maybe if they live out of town, they can come for a few days or a week and cover for you while you can go get that desperately needed break and recharge. And if you're that family member who lives remotely, don't forget to ask the local caregiver if they need a break, because they may be so engrossed in their caregiving duties that they don't even think to ask. It's just great to have those conversations and to help each other out.
Let me add a hearty amen to that. I mean, I couldn't agree more. And just because you are local, boots on the ground, you know, doesn't mean that you should be shouldering all of that. Everybody needs to pitch in because, you know, if not, you know, resentment, which is pretty unhealthy, can further exasperate things. A particular caregiver feels they're, you know, shouldering the weight, and others not showing up. It's just it's a recipe for bad feelings that could linger for a long, long time. But here, let's switch gears. On a positive note, what I've really been impressed with is continuing to hear about more employers becoming increasingly aware of their employees' need to manage work-life balance, including caregiving.
Al, you are exactly right, and that is indeed a positive note. We are seeing in our employer-related research that more and more employers are stepping up and supporting their caregiving workers. And your point is actually the perfect lead-in to my fourth strategy, and that is learn about types of caregiver support that your employer may offer. Our research finds that many employers offer flexible schedules, hybrid work arrangements, and even remote work. And all of this can help make it easier for employees to manage their job responsibilities as well as their caregiving responsibilities. Additionally, employers are stepping up by offering resources such as employee assistance programs and referrals and discounts for backup care. Larger employers in particular are more likely to offer these types of support. So if you're a caregiver, check out and see what your employer offers. They could have supports that make your life easier.
Well, I think it's become increasingly, you know, more evident that good employee relationships are just critical. You know, to that end, all employees, you know, especially high performers, whatnot, should feel supported lest they wind up, you know, voting with their feet. And that means walking out the door. Now, have you got any other thoughts on how to make life easier for the caregivers?
Al, that's a great question. And my fifth and final strategy, which indeed may be the hardest, is to have proactive and frank conversations to gain an understanding of the care recipients or future care recipients' insurance coverages, financial situation, and legal documentation that outlines their wishes. And these conversations have to happen among family members or families of choice, and they can be extremely difficult. And I want to go into detail on a couple of reasons why they're so important. And I'll start with the insurance-related issues, because Al, you and I have talked about health insurance and Medicare on recent episodes of this podcast. And we both know we worked really hard to boil the concepts into
yes,
simple.
We did.
To boil the concepts into simple and listenable terms. The reality is insurance coverages such as health insurance, as well as long-term care insurance, if your loved one has it, can be extremely complicated with regard to what is covered, the extent to which costs and services are covered, and providers that are in network. And by the way, they can even change from time to time. it is so much easier to get at least a general understanding in advance than to try to figure it out on the fly when your loved one is in need of care. And I can even give a personal example where I was caregiving and had to figure out insurance coverages that were going to determine this, that, and the other. And I had to figure it out on my own because the person I was caring for was not conscious. They couldn't, thankfully, they were later, but they couldn't answer my questions. And it was really, really hard. So to do some homework and avoid some surprises on that front. Then there's legal documentation. Boy, nobody likes to think or talk about this, but it is so important. And our research finds that relatively few people age 50 and older have established legal documents, for example, a financial power of attorney or a healthcare power of attorney that designate individuals who can act on their behalf if they're incapacitated or unable to do so. And Al, I know these topics of conversations are not for the faint of heart. They can stir up emotions, conflict, and unresolved feelings. They can be really messy. However, it is so much easier to proactively have them versus wait until a crisis when emotions are high and options are low.
Well, again, I couldn't agree with you more about the value of being proactive. I mean, really, it's like learning to fly an airplane while you're building one. And because I personally, all too familiar witnessing, you know, what can happen absent those crucial understandings and, you know, documents being filed. And as you might gather, those misunderstandings can lead to a lot of stress, intensifies things, a lot of trauma for all parties involved, including the caregivers and care recipients. And this is a time when, you know, everybody needs to be at their best, you know, focusing on their own wellness. So as we conclude today, what would be some resources that you'd like our listeners to know more about?
Al, we got some fantastic news, and there are tools and resources out there, and the number are growing. I'll just touch on a couple of examples. The Family and Medical Leave Act, or FMLA, is the federal law that requires covered employers to provide their employees with protected unpaid leave for qualified medical and family reasons. Many states are also offering worker protections. And as of 2024, 13 states now have passed legislation to create paid family and medical leave programs, which is terrific news. Additionally, beginning in 2025, Medicare is enhancing its support for caregivers, for example, training for caregivers, as well as relief for caregivers for family members who are in hospice care. Also, Medicare has a new pilot program for people living with dementia and their caregivers. You can check all of this out in the Medicare and You 2025 handbook, which can be found at medicare.gov, and you can even request a copy of it to be sent to your home via U.S. mail. And then lastly, Al, I also want to point out that there are some programs that provide financial assistance to caregivers. Again, eligibility, there's eligibility requirements and other things, but it's so important to be aware that they exist. And these types of things include if the care recipient has long-term care insurance, check if the coverage may pay for a family caregiver versus a hired caregiver. Also, some government programs will pay family or friends of people with disabilities to help them with their daily activities, including personal care, giving medicine, cooking, cleaning, and more. Check your state's Medicaid office for more information. And then one final idea, if you find as a caregiver that you're incurring a lot of expenses on behalf of the care recipient, check to see if you may be able to claim them as a dependent on your tax return.
Catherine, this is awesome and very, very welcome news. Now, where can our listeners learn more about your research as well as any other caregiving-related resources?
Well, you can find our research on our website at transamericainstitute.org. And regarding resources, I just want to give a huge shout out and highlight the outstanding work of the Rosalind Carter Institute for Caregivers.
Good stuff, and many thanks, Catherine, for all of your insight and research today. And to our listeners, I just want to end this conversation with one extremely important final reminder. Please be sure to protect your PII, as in your personally identifying information, and the PII of those you are caring for. You absolutely want to make sure to find reputable sources and do your due diligence. Like so many other aspects of our lives, scammers are relentless, and regrettably, focusing on caregivers is on the rise. Also, if you have comments, feedback, or topic ideas, please email us at info@transamericainstitute.org. Until the next time, I'm your host, Al Waller. Stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening. Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life is brought to you by Transamerica Institute, a nonprofit private foundation dedicated to identifying, researching, and educating the public about retirement security and the intersections of health and financial well-being. You can find our weekly podcasts on WYPR's website and mobile app, wherever you get your podcasts, and at transamericainstitute.org. Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life is produced by the Transamerica Institute with assistance from WYPR. The information provided here is for educational purposes only and should not be construed as insurance, securities, ERISA, tax, investment, legal, medical, or financial advice or guidance.